John Hartnell. He's going to tell us about universal incoherent magnetic transport. But just before we begin, just as a quick comment, at around 12:40, and well, maybe 12:35 actually, we can keep the schedule tight. We're going to try and do a conference photo in the atrium, followed by lunch. Again, at the bistro where it was yesterday. So, in case some reason missed that information. Okay, thanks.
Great. Well, thanks for the opportunity to speak. It's always a pleasure to be back at PI. So, right, I'm going to talk about some speculations that are in this paper that appeared a few weeks ago. So, several people already talked about linear resistivities. So, let me just remind you that indeed linear resistivities are all over the place. And so, here we have a sample of materials. This presentation I've taken from actually a very nice Physics Today article by Subir and Kaimer that you should all read. So we have, what do we have? Nicktides, heavy fermions, organics, cuprates, strontium, ruthenates. All right? And all these are plots of basically the exponent of the resistivity. So the resistivity is going like T to the alpha. This is basically a plot of the logarithmic derivative of this with respect to temperature, which is one way of extracting alpha. And roughly what you're seeing is that the thing in the middle is linear. And to the side, you have something maybe more like a T squared, which is a Fermi liquid result. Okay, so there are many different materials that have linear and T resistivities, often in interesting regimes, and the regime gets bigger as you go up to higher temperatures. Okay. So it's very tempting to try to wonder whether there's any kind of universal mechanism or dynamic that goes into this linear T resistivities. From a microscopic picture, that seems tricky because these materials are certainly very distinct, and it's quite likely that the scattering mechanisms are quite different across all these different materials. So, however, one encouraging experimental result that possibly in favor of some kind of notion of universality is the following one, which I'll just lead you through quickly. So we're heading towards this plot. So if they do something a little more tricky, a little more sophisticated than what I'm about to say, because there can be multiple bands in these materials and so on and so forth. But morally, what they're doing is you say, okay, we're going to write a Drude formula, which may or may not apply in these materials, but let's just do it anyway. So the Drude formula gives the conductivity in terms of the density of electrons, the effective mass of electrons, and a scattering time scale. The density of electrons, let's say these are 2D layered materials. So then this is given by K Fermi and the interlayer spacing, right? And so you measure the conductivity just from the resistivity. Both the Fermi momentum and the effective mass you measure from quantum oscillations. So it doesn't matter if you don't know what that is, but it gives you, so the period gives you certain susceptibility as a function of a magnetic field. The period gives you KF, and the temperature dependence of the amplitude gives you the mass. So that's something you can measure quite robustly. So then you plug these into these formula and you extract tau. Okay, that's what these guys did. So in this paper, they took representative materials for which data existed and they extracted tau. Okay, for a bunch of materials with a linear and T resistivity. So this is actually not presented in the most intuitive way, but this axis is V Fermi in these materials. Okay, so V Fermi is ranging over two orders of magnitude. Okay. So these include, over here we even have copper, okay, which we all think we understand. And here you have some heavy fermions, strontium ruthenates, nictides, cuprates, organic material. Okay. Again, this is a plot in a slightly weird way. What this plot is really showing, I don't know why they did it, like they should have just plotted tau. Okay, but it's showing that in all these materials, the timescale that you extract is a number, alpha, which is experimentally measured between 1 and 2 in all these materials, times this universal rate, h bar over k Boltzmann times the temperature. Okay, so that's this line. So alpha equals 1 is this line here. Okay, so the idea is you can do a somewhat naive but not unnatural sort of dimensional analysis, essentially. Put in the scales that you can measure in the right place, you extract the time scale, and it's basically the same in all these materials. Okay. In particular, there are no small numbers. It's just given in terms of H bar, K Boltzmann, and a temperature. All right. Good. So this is the these are the linear T regimes of due to just phonon scattering and all these materials. This is it copper in a nonlinear in T regime. So the resistivity is much lower. There's no mystery. I'll come back to these. These are all high temperature linear T expansion of all these guys. Yes. So this is, can be perfectly well explained with an order one electron phonon coupling about the Debye scale. Of course, yes. Good. Okay. So let's take this as some evidence that perhaps there is something, some kind of universal something going on. Okay. So in this talk, the objective is to explore the following possibility. So perhaps these systems show universal behavior because they're close to saturating a universal bound. Right? The nice thing about a bound is it doesn't refer to the microscopics. Okay? So it could be many different mechanisms that are all strongly coupling and they can all want to saturate. There's a bound. They'll all tend to push up against this bound because they know small numbers. And that can be a way of getting thinking about universality. Okay. This thought has been around for a while. And in particular, this inspiration of the Kofkinson Starnitz, we have a prototype of such a bound, which is the viscosity bound. And many people, including Sabir, Jan Zanin, and this Brunner et al. Paper, which is Andy McKenzie's group, have the ideas out there that we should try to think about how we can apply such a bound to metals. So as I'm going to get to, it's complicated to apply bounds to metals because the DC conductivity wants to be infinite if you have translation invariance. And so the conductivity is very sensitive to how you break translation invariance, which is related to how the system couples to disorder or to the lattice, and that's something very extrinsic to the system. It's not a very universal process. Okay, I'll come back to this. So it's been difficult to directly, in particular viscosity has almost certainly nothing to do with conduction in metals. Okay. So what this talks about is a quasi-concrete proposal for how we might think about formulating these viscosity type bounds in metals. And some nice things, there will be some nice phenomenology that comes out. Okay. So to want to apply a bound, what we need, okay, so clearly what we're interested in, right, is understanding this kind of time scale. But then what I really have to do is tell you what this time scale is. Okay. So when you write down this formula, what you have in mind is that this is a quasi-particle lifetime, which it almost certainly is not. Okay. So if I want to talk about some sort of universal bounded lifetime, I have to really tell you precisely what lifetime it is. Okay, that's sort of the logic of this talk. Right? Okay, so to do that, I'm going to classify metals by transport. Just for slightly provocative, just to contrast with what Seamus said earlier. So it's true that microscopically you might think the self-energy is the most fundamental quantity and that these transports are very derived second or third order. But if we're in a regime without quasi-particles, it's conceivable that the transport is more fundamental. I don't even know if that's true, but it's conceivable, and so it's interesting. So I'm trying to take a way into these, maybe there's some kind of bound. We have no weakly interaction description for something, natural bound, quantum bounds that might follow just from quantum mechanics. Might be very useful starting points rather than endpoints to understand these systems. Okay. So with that point of view, I'm going to classify metals according to transport. Okay. So the way that I want to think about this is that the DC, particularly the DC conductivity, so that's zero frequency, that's long time scales. So the DC conductivity of a metal is determined by the longest lived excitation that carries charge in the material. Or heat, if we're interested in thermal transport. So I'm going to say we're going to go through all these possibilities, but the first distinction is whether or not there are quasi-particles in the system. So a quasi-particle is a certain structure of long-lived quantities that I come to. Let's say there are no quasi-particles, and I also want to distinguish between two cases I'm going to call coherent and incoherent. Please note that I'm making this distinction after separating quasi-particle and non-quasi-particle, because with quasi-particles, this distinction doesn't really make sense. Okay. this is roughly a sort of ballistic-like transport. This is a diffusive-like transport with quasiparticles, both at diffusion time. Everything's determined by the quasiparticle lifetime, so you can't distinguish between diffusion and just the decay of the quasiparticles. We'll come to this. Okay, so quasiparticle transport is the, I'm going to define it to be the case where the longest-lived excitations in your system, there are many of them, and they're labeled by the deviation of the occupation numbers of some excitations from, I don't know, the Fermi-Dirac distribution. So you have the Fermi-Dirac distribution, that's some n of k, and then you perturb it out of equilibrium, you have a bunch of excitations labeled by momentum, and those are all long-lived, okay? Those are your quasiparticles. So the Boltzmann, then if this applies to your material, then you know what equation you should use. You should use the Boltzmann equation, which says delta nk dot equals stuff, okay? So when these are your variables, the Boltzmann equation is your equation. So with the under the Boltzmann equation, you can derive a first bound that we're going to talk about, which is this Modioff-Regel bound that Liam mentioned yesterday. So within a Boltzmann equation, you're roughly going to get some kind of formula like this for the connectivity. So let's just imagine a sort of one lifetime, all these quasiparticles decay at about the same lifetime, then you'll get this Struder formula for the connectivity, where the key quantity is the quasiparticle lifetime. We can relate the mass and the n, we can express that in terms of kf, the Fermi momentum, and instead of the lifetime, we can use L, which is the mean free path. Okay, those are just related by a factor of the Fermi velocity. Right. And then you say, well, if I'm going to use this Boltzmann sort of description, it had better be that the mean free path of the particles is longer than their Compton wavelength, which amounts to saying that kf times L should be bigger than 1. And so you then say, so that's sort of a self-consistency condition for a single particle picture, right? I mean, if the particles are scatter, you know, at shorter distances than their mean free path is shorter than their Compton wavelength, they're clearly interacting strongly, right? So, okay, so then you say this should be 1. So this is not a universal bound, okay? This is a bound on having a quasiparticle description, okay, crucially. So this is not where we're heading, right? We're going to contrast. So then you get this bound that should be bigger than some number set by the Fermi velocity and some fundamental constants. So that's this bound, okay? So the Modioff-Regel bound is also sometimes formulated in terms of the lattice length, but let's not worry about that. So there you've got resistivity against temperature, and if you have a quasiparticle description, the resistivity has to be below this bound. Okay, that's the Modioff-Regel bound. Okay. Now, that went. See, it's a very interesting thing in metals that the low energy excitations are not at low momentum. Okay, so it's actually you get a different picture if you want to think about the lifetime instead of the mean free path. And so let's take this formula again, but now let's write it in terms of tau, the lifetime, not the mean free path. Okay, so if your system is suitably, thermally equilibrated, which might not happen at very low temperatures with impurities, but if you're sufficiently high temperature, then your quasiparticles will have energy of order k Boltzmann times the temperature, and that's the characteristic energy scale in the system. And so you can use an uncertainty, you can put a bound on the lifetime using this uncertainty principle argument that the energy times the lifetime should be roughly bigger than h bar. And so now, if you do that, so again, I'm with quasiparticles, this tau should be bigger than 1 over t, and so you'll get this, okay? And so now that's, if you turn that upside down to get a resistivity, the resistivity has to be less. Now I've got this line here, okay? So for quasiparticle transports, right? So I've done, so this is the usual Modioff-Regel bound. I'm saying that there's another bound, again, assuming that they're suitably thermally equilibrated, that the average energy is the temperature, you'll get this bound. Now, you can't go above this point because then you're above the Modioff-Regel bound, so quasiparticles, I think, will put you here. Okay. So this is already a linear T resistivity, but with quasiparticles. So, for example, if you have electron-phonon scattering above the Debye scale with an order 1 electron-phonon coupling, which actually, due to Migdal's theorem, is still has the quasiparticle description, you can saturate this bound. So this copper and all these elemental materials that I showed before are along here. Okay. However, let me go back a second. Of these materials, some of these, in particular, the nictide and the cuprates, their linear T resistivity goes along this line and goes straight through the bound. Okay, so this is not enough to explain the data. Okay, so that was quasiparticles. Any questions about that?
So isn't the definition of a quasiparticle the fact that it's long lived, meaning that it's mean free, its decay rate is much longer, for instance, much longer than the frequency?
So, right?
Yes.
I'm a zero frequency.
No, I'm saying the energy of it.
Right, yeah.
So in this sense, how can you separate this bound with quasiparticle?
So there's a very interesting, yes, actually, this electron photon scattering is kind of interesting. And it has to do with some things that we heard about yesterday about Fermi liquids, that, so you have these four fermion interactions, which are almost all irrelevant except for the forward scattering ones, which can be some. Okay, so it's tractable, and it is weakly interact. You can do it at Feynman diagrams. However, the lifetime, so there are no strong vertex corrections, the quasiparticle size, but the lifetime can become quite small. It's like, so, yeah. So,
you're saying over the universe energy.
Yeah. So there's a paper by.
So what's the definition of quasiparticle then?
So I'm saying, I'm going to call it, I'm going to call things a quasipart. Well, that you do have equations in terms of these variables.
Can I ask it?
Yes.
This is probably obvious to most people in the audience, but for a high energy theorist, the Compton wavelength is a relativistic quantity. But how are you defining Compton wavelength here? Are you using Fermi velocity rather than speed of light?
I'm using de Broglie, sorry. Yeah, de Broglie.
Well, you meant de Broglie. Oh,
yeah, sorry. Is it not? Yeah, okay. That's what I meant. Yes, sorry. Yeah. Just quantum mechanics. I don't know, but everyone's happy. So.
What is the temperature when these two lines?
Right, this up to order one numbers. So actually, it turns out I'm not going to good figure. So this torque factors of 2 and pi, but experimentally that can be the difference between 200 degrees and 1,000 degrees. So you know, but this so up to fact this would be T Fermi, right? But it could be down by factors of pi and stuff. But yeah. Okay, so now suppose you don't have quasiparticles, right? Then you should not use a Boltzmann equation. So my definition of quasiparticles is that a Boltzmann equation is the right thing to do. Okay, that's pragmatically what I mean. So then you ask, what's the longest lived quantity in the system? So there are two options. And so I'm gonna call a metal coherent if, despite the fact that there are no quasiparticles, there is at least one quantity that is long lived, okay? Parametrically longer than the temperature scale, okay? So what do I mean? So that means, I mean that there exists some quantity, let's call it P, because what we should have in our mind is that it's the momentum. It doesn't have to be the momentum, but it could be. And this quantity has to have a non-zero overlap with the current that we care about, okay? So the susceptible, meaning that if we set out the state with some momentum, it should carry some currents, okay? So it has to overlap with the currents. And it's long-lived, meaning that it decays with a rate that's much less than the temperature scale. So the case we might have in mind is that it's the momentum, and that we're in a situation where momentum-conserving interactions are very strong, so you kill all the quasiparticles, but the effects, things that can relax momentum, like umklapp and disorder, are weak. Okay, you could imagine, especially, right, in fact, so for example, almost all, many holographic systems are in this limit. Okay, the interactions are strong, but in the IR, the effects of the lattice are weak. So if you're in this limit, then basically the conductivity is all determined by gamma, which is the rate at which momentum relaxes, right? Because you set up a current, almost everything decays, the momentum remains, right? So this is the picture. So you have some J. So the current starts decaying, but the current has some overlap momentum. Momentum is almost conserved, so this is time. So momentum decays very slowly. So the current starts decaying quickly, and then it gets dragged along by the momentum, right? So the late time current, which is the DC conductivity, is all determined by the rate at which the momentum is relaxing. Okay, so you can prove, in this case, that the conductivity are some susceptibilities, because there has to be an overlap times, and you get a sharp, a narrow Judah peak whose width is given by, not by the quasiparticle lifetime, because there are no quasiparticles, but by the rate of momentum relaxation. Okay.
So generically, this has to be a conserved current, right?
Because generic state
at high temperature, its decay rate will be
lower. Right, so I want it to be much exact. So the temperature scale is the rate at which generic things decay, and you want something that lives long, parametrically longer than that, and which overlaps with the current. So I spent most of the last 2 years thinking about this kind of situation. Maybe Subir is going to talk about it later this week. I don't know if that's so. This is not what I'm talking about today. Okay. So today I'm going to talk about the other possibility, which is that it's incoherent. Okay.
Is there an example of an incoherent?
I'm going to show you some beautiful.
No, theory.
I'm not sure. Well, actually, yeah. Let me say what it is first, and then we can talk about whether it exists or not. So, you know, experimentally, I think.
Come on.
Yeah. I will try to make a strong experimental case that these things exist, and therefore there better be a theorem, theory of them. All right. So, good. So, and I know a stupid way of making a theory of it, but I'll come to that in a second too. So in an incoherent metal, there is no long-lived quantity that overlaps with the current in this sense, okay? And so again, long-lived means parametrically longer than the temperature scale, okay? It could be of order the temperature is fine. Generic things decay at order the temperature, all right? So this could happen, for example, if umklapp scattering is strong or disorder scattering is strong and the interactions are strong. So there's just nothing that lives long, okay?
The examples we know where umklapp scattering is small, strong, then you invariably go into some other theory with a new set of variables. There again, there's a new conserved momentum.
So let me. Good. Okay. So I'm being. So
if it's strong disorder, I agree. But with strong disorder, not having a good.
So again, there are going to be some experimental plots, and so these things exist. But it's true that what he's saying that something that could happen that's. I think we'll have identical film. What I'm saying will apply to that case also is that in the UV, so the microscopic description is strong umklapp and strong interactions. And then what you can flow to in the IR at long distances is a theory with momentum conserved, but with the overlap with the current being zero. So this is that you get an emergent particle hole symmetry. Okay, so what your effective description is translation invariant, but this quantity is zero. So the connectivity. So this happens at superfluid insulator transitions, at some theories of the Mott transition, and at various other cases. So everything I'm going to say will basically apply to this case as well. Actually, it's pretty cool. This can happen, but it does. Yeah.
That's visible, I guess, in some non-linear response. So the fact that there's no overlap of momentum and the linear response means that it can come back, right? The fact that there's a conserved quantity can come back to the current. You should be able to distinguish between that and one which is not.
Yeah, actually, it's an interesting question. It's not. Yes, I would like to understand that better. Actually, So the question is there an invariant distinction between cases that do have a peak, but this gamma is huge, and cases where the weight is zero. Okay, I'm not actually, I'm not sure it's that easy, but yeah. Okay. But let's say so nothing. So this case does fall under this description, right? There's nothing long lived that overlaps with the currents. Okay, and again, I think experimentally it's just clear that this is going to be true. All right. So now in that case, what are the longest lived quantities? So clearly. Energy and charge are conserved. Okay. Now, energy, we might have to include the phonons, but let's leave that for a moment. Okay. So, you know, momentum can be broken, but there's no time dependent. You know, the amount of charge in the system is conserved. Okay. And those are, in fact, related to currents at any finite momentum. So these conductivities are all at k equals zero, the infinite wavelength. And at k equals zero, k k being the momentum, you can't couple a vector and a scalar, obviously, right? But at any finite k, they're coupled through the conservation equation, right? So the densities I'm going to talk about are the energy and the charge density, and this would be the energy and the electric currents, will certainly satisfy this equation, right? Anyone? What we want to calculate are the conductivities that are defined through this equation, that the current is the conductivity times the gradient of the chemical potential in the case of the electric, that's the electric field, and the gradient of the temperature for the thermal conductivities. Okay, so there's a matrix of conductivities. There's an electric and a heat current, and there's a chemical potential and a temperature that sources them. All right. Changes in the densities are related to changes in the chemical potential through thermodynamic susceptibilities. Okay, that's the definition of the susceptibilities. Okay, so now we do the following. You take this equation, you plug that into here, right? The NDT is now Laplacian of mu. Then the Laplacian of mu, you change into Laplacian of n, right? And then clearly you get a diffusion equation for the densities, okay? And furthermore, the diffusion constant you get is going to be given in terms of these conductivities and these susceptibilities. This is a century-old argument that goes back to Einstein, I guess. And so you have these Einstein relations that relate the connect. So in fact, we see that this diffusion of charge, even though it doesn't directly couple to the current in overlap sense, if in a diffusive regime, the conductivities are determined by the diffusivities, by the susceptibilities, okay? Okay, so these are called Einstein relations. And what we really care about are the rates of diffusion, which are the eigenvalues of this matrix, right? The poles are the Green's functions, the dispersion relations, omega goes like whatever, I, d, k squared. These dispersions are given by the eigenvalues, d, of this matrix. So put the susceptibility to the other side, calculate the eigenvalues of d, okay, which are characterized by the trace and the determinant of the matrix, okay? And then you'll find these relationships between the eigenvalues of this matrix and given in terms of the conductivities and the susceptibilities. And you get these formulae, okay? So this tells you the product of, so where sigma, that's the electrical conductivity, that's the thermal conductivity, this is the electric susceptibility, I think especially the charge compressibility is what it's normally called, that's the heat capacity, and then there's some annoying off-diagonal terms. That's the thermoelectric conductivity, and this is the, I don't know what to call it, the thermoelectric susceptibility. It's it's free energy d mu dt. Okay. And so in general, that's these are your equations. Okay. And so good. Right. Now, this term's a bit annoying. So in this first pass, I'm just going to drop it, right? That's actually not that unreasonable. So for example, in a Fermi liquid, which is not where we are, the thermoelectric conductivity is down by a power of T over EF compared to the other conductivities in sort of natural units. And this thermoelectric susceptibility is also down by powers of T over EF in a Fermi liquid, okay? So just in this first pass, I'm going to drop this term, okay? Because then it's nice. And then you have just the standard Einstein relations, that the electric conductivity is susceptibility times one of the diffusion constants, and the thermal conductivity is the heat capacity times another diffusion constant. Okay. So, and this is a nice starting point if you want to think about universal physics, because momentum relaxation, if your conductivities are coherent, meaning that the conductivity is determined by Drude-like physics, okay, there's some width gamma of the Drude peak. And this gamma is the rate of momentum relaxation, okay, which depends on, well, how the theory couples to the lattice or disorder, for example. Okay, it's not a particularly, it depends on dimensions of operators in your strongly coupled theory, for example. Whilst diffusion is just intrinsic to the system, you don't need to know what happened to the momentum. It's just gone from the beginning, okay? All right, so now, good. So then the question we can ask is, might these diffusion constants be universally bounded? Okay, that's what we're going to explore. And so, for example, in a quasiparticle regime, there's no distinction between Drude and diffusive physics because everything's determined by the same lifetime of the quasiparticles. But in a quasi-particle regime, the diffusion constant in a Fermi liquid is Vf squared times tau, okay? This is, I think it's a factor of 1/3 or something. And then so if I apply the bound that I had before, that would tell me that diffusion constant should be bigger than Vf squared h bar over t. This is, of course, the same. This is not a different bound than this one I had. So again, here you can use up to order one factors. You can use either the Drude formula or an Einstein relation. You'll get the same answer because it's all about the quasi-particles. So I'm just rephrasing this bound instead of using this formula. I use this one. But again, up to order one numbers, you get the same the same connectivity. Okay, so what we'd like to do is somehow extend, is it possible that this bound for diffusion could be extended beyond the quasi-particle regime? Okay, that's, I'm saying, okay, that's the objective. Okay, so now let's take some inspiration from our friends. So they took the following observation. So eta over s, so that's the shear viscosity divided by the entropy density, the sort of the Drude-like, in a quasi-particle description, eta is epsilon times tau, and the entropy is K Boltzmann times the density of states. And so if you apply the uncertainty principle to that, that's energy over n is the energy per quasi-particle, tau's lifetime, so this should be bigger than h bar over K Boltzmann. Okay. And so they then took the bold step of saying that this bound should be true, not only with quasi-particles, but in general. Okay, that because eta over s is certainly well-defined with or without quasi-particles, so perhaps it has this bound. I'm going to sort of de-emphasize, it came with a 1 over 4 pi in originally, and I think the status of what the constant should be is not has not converged. So, but there's some bound. The idea is that there's some bound, and I'm not going to worry too much about what the numerical factor is. Okay.
So it does not worry about the numerical factor, it can be 0, right? So.
Okay,
you have this.
So when we look at data, you know, if it's 1/10, I'm not going to worry too much. But if it's an experiment with a 1/1000, then that's stretching it a bit. I mean,
So should one say that it's like if it's on this regime, then it's strongly interacting and it's kind of perfect fluid, but there is no bound, right? Strict bound.
I think we don't know, right? So the idea is there is a bound.
Okay.
But I have no idea what the prefactor is. If the prefactor is, you know, 1/1,000,000, it might not be a very useful bound, right? So if I'm going to try to say that the reason that all these metals have comparable resistivity is because they're trying to saturate, then this should be, you know, an order one-ish kind of number up to some factors of pi.
Okay.
And so the reason they took this bold step was there was some evidence for it, which is that in holographic models which do not have quasi-particles, there's this kind of bound, the viscosity was not arbitrarily small. And secondly, well, I guess more later, there was also data on strongly interacting systems that also showed the viscosity not going to zero. So just let me remind you, these are plots like these ones. So in the quark gluon plasma, just above the deconfinement temperature, eta over s is maybe somewhere in that range. I don't know what the latest error bars are. And then in some cold lithium atoms at unitarity, at low temperatures, eta over s is, you know, so I guess these are the lowest values, lowest measured values of eta over s that we know of. And okay, you know, this does look like it might be going down, but okay. The lowest measured value is around 0.2. It's not 10 to the minus 6. Okay, I guess that's sort of where it's at.
So,
yes?
Is there any estimate for the so-called Bose metal where you have independent phase fluctuations dominating Hubble state, like under the.
So you want a theoretical estimate or?
Yeah, theoretical.
I don't know, but an experimental measurement would be even better, right? Yeah. But actually, as I'm going to get to, the viscosities, I don't think it's not the right quantity in for these metals. Okay. So shear viscosity quantifies the diffusion of momentum, right? So in a translation invariant system, momentum is also conserved as well as heat and energy and charge. So momentum also diffuses. And in a zero density relativistic plasma, zero charge density, then eta over s is related to the diffusion of momentum by this formula. okay, which we can rewrite as the diffusion is bigger than this quantity. So now, there's a slightly annoying factor, the speed of light squared there, okay? And this formula is definitely requires things that are, this relationship is just not true in a metal, okay? However, right, so if we believe, let's say we believe eta over s is bounded, then we believe in a relativistic plasma, the diffusion of momentum is bounded, okay? Could it be that diffusion in general is bounded, okay? Is that possible? So, you know, the fact, so we had a bound for quasi-particle transport that looked like this, okay? So this is, you know, one might be forgiven for wanting to replace the C with the Fermi velocity, okay? It's the characteristic speed in a metal. So let's postulate that diffusion constants in metals are bounded, you know, with or without quasi-particles, are bounded by h bar of a kBT with a factor of Vf squared. Okay. Now, so, yes?
Sorry, so just to understand this relativistic plasma equation, so the zero density limit?
So in relating these, so E plus P is ST plus mu rho, okay? That's the thermodynamic identity. To do this little maneuver I did there, you have to not have that term. Yeah, I mean, that's not trivial. Not trivial thing, but
okay. more net charge.
Which there certainly is in a metal, right? So this bound does not follow from this one, okay? It's inspired by, but it doesn't follow. And also, someone should complain at this point that I want to talk about no quasi particles, but so I should really, what do I really mean by B Fermi? It's not totally obvious, okay? But I want the metal to have a characteristic velocity associated to it, which.
But it could be bandwidth, narrow band, for example.
So does that have dimensions of, as long as it has dimensions of velocity? Okay.
In your paper, you seem to assume that it's coming from the compressibility. That's, as far as I can tell, that's your definition of Vf.
No. That the compressibility doesn't come until I relate it to the.
You haven't talked about it here, but in your paper, that's the only place I can find you actually define what.
No, Vf I don't define Vf. No, okay.
So then what does this mean?
Look, we're gonna. As I said, this is quasi well defined.
I refuse to proceed until you tell us what.
Okay. So good. Okay, let me give you want a theoretical experiment or a pragmatic?
I want any kind of
answer. Okay, so, you know, experimentally, at zero temperature, all these things do become good metals, so you could definitely extract the Vf at zero temperature, for example.
Okay.
Theoretically, something that I would be quite tempted to put here, that I'm thinking about, this is very preliminary, might be something like the speed of zero sound, for example, that might exist without quasi-particles. Okay. So that, I think it's very, so the whole point about metals is that the low energy does not mean low velocity. So I think, I don't doubt that it will be possible to associate a rather natural velocity in a metal, but okay. Well, this could be the mean squared velocity of the actual electrons in the thing, right? I mean, that should do it as well. I don't like that because it's microscopic.
Why not the Fermi momentum into mass units?
No, Fermi momentum, no. So I need the whole point is the natural thing that goes here is a velocity. So I don't want to start talking about other dimensions. So okay, I gave you three.
How are you going to measure D?
Let me come there. Let me come. That, so that will be. I'll come. Let me. That's
from the conductivity.
No. Yeah. Indeed. So, I think the most important thing that is going to come from this is that it would be great to measure D directly. I'm aware of one measurement of thermal diffusivity in a cuprate, which I'll come to from a long time ago. I don't think it should be impossible to measure these things.
I agree.
Yeah. No, but it's... But
there isn't
right.
Much.
Sorry?
There isn't much as far as...
No, exactly. But that's great. So I'm motivating a different kind of measurement than what people have normally done. Right? That's sort of the point. Yeah, exactly. But from this incoherent way of looking at it, the diffusion is the natural... The diffusivity is the natural organizing concept. Right, exactly. So, for example, there's a lot of discussion in terms of, you know, spectral weight transfer of in the connectivities thing. And if you're going to use the Judah formula, you know, people like to talk about plasma frequencies and and lifetimes, okay? And I want to say these are not, I would rather talk about susceptibilities and diffusion constants, which are logically distinct quantities. So this is sort of a Drude, this is if you have a Drude picture in your mind, you think of these quantities. If you have diffusion in your mind, you think of these, and they're not this. Yeah, so reorganizing the thoughts is kind of the main point, right? More than being totally precise about these bounds. Okay, so now I'm going to take, so I have a tenuously motivated and quasi-defined bound. So I just want to see what follows from that. Okay, let's see how far a bound like this gets us. So again, for me, the main point is that many people have talked about bounds in metals before, but I want to make a concrete proposal for a quantity that's actually bounded. Okay, that's the point. Yes?
Is it too holographic?
Let's come to that. That also relates to Subir's earlier question about are there any examples of incoherent metals? Good. So, well, first, a slightly simple thing is, of course, we get the linear resistivity right away for the same reason that we got it here for the phonons. So let's say that a strongly interacting system is going to want to approximately saturate this bound because there are no order one. No small numbers. So then the resistivity will be 1 over the susceptibility times the diffusion constant. So let's take the diffusion constant to saturate this bound. And then let's very roughly estimate the susceptibility, which at temperatures below E Fermi is basically a constant. I mean, it doesn't have a strong temperature dependence. For example, in the Fermi liquid, it doesn't have a strong temperature dependence. Let's just run with that sort of dimensional analysis answer. Then you'll get this. So clearly that has a linear resistivity. And if you were to analyze it a la Brun et al. At this paper, i.e. write down the Drude formula and extract the tau, which is not the right thing to do, but you can do it, and you will get tau. That's h bar k Boltzmann over t, okay? Because they're no scales, so that sort of had to come out. But what's nice now, because this bound is not stated with quasiparticles, that so if it can clearly go right through, the diffusion can just it doesn't care about the module for irregular bounds. Okay, it has its own bound, which is this line. So this is the bound. Incoherent diffusive transport cannot be above here. Quasiparticle transport can't be above there. So this is the linear. This is the bound that these systems can just follow. Okay, so they can certainly have linear resistivity with this universal time scale and cross the module for irregular bound without any problems. Okay. So actually, this was something pointed out by Jan a long time ago. So another way of looking at the slope of the linear resistivity. So right, this in this formula. So this time scale is roughly about the statement about the slope of the linear resistivity. So in this formula, the slope of the resistivity is given by Kf and Ef, right, without any small numbers. Another way, so. Okay, let me try. So this is a plot of the superfluid density against the conductivity at TC times TC. So if the conductivity at TC times TC, if the conductivity is 1 over TC, is 1 over T, which it is, then this is just basically the slope of the resistivity. Okay. Again, a la dimensional analysis, not caring about factors of 2 and 4 and pi and so on. So the superfluid density is, well, this density over the mass, and that's given again by E Fermi. So this factor of Kf to the D, that's because that's what gives you the density, right? The inverse length scales. And it turns out there's an E Fermi if you do it properly. Okay, so this is a plot of many cuprates and actually some nictides too. So the cuprates are this paper by Holmes et al, this Wu et al, it's the cuprates, sorry, the nictides. And right, let me get this right. Confused about something. All right, no, this says they're equal. Right, exactly. Good. So this formula is true. Okay, so this is another way. This basically is a different way of packaging the same information that I showed at the beginning. Right, the claim is that the slope of the linear T resistivity is just given in terms of E Fermi and K Fermi in a natural way. Okay, that's all this plot is saying. Another sort of simple thing is that, so in the slope, especially if you're in two dimensions, there's a 1 over E Fermi. So another here's some other measurements of how the slope of the resistivity depends on doping in LSCO. So actually an important point in the LSCO is that there are two linear resistivities. Okay, there's a high temperature and a low temperature one. They're distinct. And one way you can see that, right, so it looks like this, actually. So there's this linear T regime. And if you kill the superconductivity with the magnetic field, there's another linear T regime down here. Okay, so actually it goes like that. But these are quite different. So that's the slope of the low T regime. This is the slope of the high T regime. Okay, and I don't want to spend too much time. I don't think it's the most interesting part. But the slope is going down as you go towards optimal doping. And indeed, the EF, you can extract E Fermi by, for example, some symbols. And E Fermi, right? Because of the picture is on the underdoped, you have these kind of small Fermi surfaces, and they're getting, their EF is getting bigger with doping as you go up towards optimal doping. Once you're over optimal doping, the Fermi surface is very big, and the changes in doping don't produce big changes of E Fermi. So that's why it tapers off here. But at this underdoping, that's plausibly has the same trend as 1 over E Fermi. But are these things incoherent? Okay, so the direct way to see if things are incoherent is, of course, to look at the optical conductivity and ask if they have a Drude peak. Okay, that's where you want to go. So all materials in which I'm aware of measurements of optical conductivity with a linear and T resistivity, and I'm about to give you like 10 of them, they all show that the width of the Drude peak is going like the temperature. And when you cross this line, which as Son asked earlier, this is roughly up to some factors, when you cross this line, you basically just lose the Drude peak altogether. So let me show you this. This is the frequency dependent conductivity. Okay. So annoyingly, some of these are log-log plots, some of them are log-linear, some of them are linear-linear, okay? So how steep it looks to the eye, you know, depends on how you do the plot, okay? But here's the resistivity, I don't know if that counts. You know, it's very interesting. You look at this paper and they say there's no feature, the conductivity is linear all the way from 200 up. And then you look here and that looks like a bit of a kink, roughly, actually, when you cross the Modjoffy-Regel bound. But apparently it doesn't exist. So, okay. All right. So, but anyway, this is at least linear-esque up there, and this is the optical conductivity. As you increase the temperature, the Drude peak gets wider and wider. Okay, and in fact, it's going like T. The width of Drude peak is that it's not separated from the temperature scale, and in particular, when you cross the Modjoffy-Regel bound, which is somewhere here, at around 400 or 500 Kelvin, the Drude peaks. There's no structure. Okay. So you can do this in BISCO and YBCO. So these plots don't go to as high temperature, okay? So you don't quite see the sort of really cool flattening, but you definitely see it getting thicker. And so that's the 300 Kelvin. And you've extracted the time scale from that. It's not separated from the temperature scale, all right? You can do this in nictides. Again, at high temperatures in the linear T regime, there's just no Drude peak, okay? You start going up, Drude peak flattens.
So what is the, you remind me again, why precisely this cannot be described in the model where P dot is approximately zero?
Okay, very good. So if the momentum relaxation rate is set by is not separated from the temperature, if gamma is of order T, KBT,
there are many
decay processes happening at that time scale. I mean, generic, because the temperature is the... So let me say, the next quasi-normal mode will be at that distance from the real axis, the temperature.
Okay.
So in that sense, there's no parametric separation. That's all. But look at these ones. I mean, so... Okay, nictide. But I think these are some of the most impressive. If you're happy to go away from cuprates and nictides, I mean, look at this. Okay, beautiful linear T resistivity, okay? When you get to high temperatures, I mean, there isn't even a peak, right? I mean, this looks like, you know, knowing nothing about this material, that there's a quasi, that it's just tracking some quasi-normal mode. It's not at zero anymore. It's just moved away. That the dominant feature in the optical connectivity here is not at zero frequency. There's another example, beautiful linear resistivity. The optical connectivity, is sort of conventional at low temperatures, and you heat it up, you just totally lose. There's not a Drude peak.
Where's the divide temperature?
No, wait. I'll come. Let me come to this. I'll effectively answer your question in 2 minutes. I promise. Yeah. And just some more examples. Very nice linear in T. At the high temperatures, very totally incoherent structure. Linear T, high temperatures, incoherent structure. Okay. Sorry, go.
I have a question on that model you had up there, but maybe that's
necessary. So about
the one that you erased, where you have an emergent IR fixed point where P bar is zero.
Yeah, I think these could. I think these are. I think that's. So actually.
But even in those models, there should be. Even though P dot is zero at the fixed point, it's slightly away, it isn't. So there should be like a tiny, should be another peak, a Drude peak eventually emerging, even in that model.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, these guys sometimes have dots here for the DC connectivity, and
But the optical connectivity seems to go smoothly into the DC connectivity.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Right. So
the DC connectivity should see that peak, which
in
the models. But then you have, maybe you can have a disorder at that point, but okay.
So what I'm trying to say, I think there is, it's definitely not ridiculous to say that many of these linear in T regimes look pretty incoherent. Okay, that's the message I want to say, which is consistent with the idea that the connectivities might be controlled by diffusion rather than by a ballistic process, at least at high temperatures. So now this is going to address, I think, what John was maybe about to say, that there is another way to get linear. There's a very unimpressive way to get linear T resistivity, okay, which is that electron phonon type scattering above a Debye scale, meaning it doesn't have to literally be a phonon. It doesn't have to literally be a Debye scale. What you need is a mode. So if you have a mode whose dispersion relation omega versus k has a maximum, and your temperature is well above this maximum, and you scatter off this mode, you will get a linear T resistivity. Okay, and if the coupling is order one, it'll have all the right slopes. So it'd be nice to distinguish cleanly these two possibilities. Okay, so here are two ways of doing this. Firstly, that this is a quasi-particle mechanism and it cannot cross the Modjoff-Rego bound, which many of these materials do. Okay, and secondly, another nice, very nice thing is that, so normally you think of elastic scattering as happening at very low temperatures, but actually if you scatter off a mode like this, it becomes elastic again at very high temperatures. And that's because your temperature's up here, okay, and your electrons are at the temperature scale, but all the modes that you scatter off, any individual scattering event, you're scattering off a mode whose energy is necessarily below this bound. And so the energy that the electron loses is very small compared to its total energy. And so the electron experiences, it thinks that it's scattering elastically, okay, even though it's at very high temperatures, because all the modes it can scatter off have much lower energy than the electron, okay? And elastic scattering has a very clean signature in transport, in that it leads to something, if you have quasi-particles that scatter elastically, that means that they don't lose energy, okay? And that means that the rate at which they lose momentum and the rate at which they lose heat, the rate at which the heat current gets degraded and the rate at which the electric current gets degraded are related. Because if you have an inelastic process, you bounce, you lose momentum, but you also lose some energy. And that means you degrade your heat current more quickly, right? Because you're losing energy, you're slowing down and you're losing energy. But if it's elastic, the rate at which you lose heat and the rate at which you lose charge current are the same, okay? And this fact is expressed in something called the Wiedemann-Franz law, which is that the thermal connectivity of a sigma has to take a certain value. Yeah.
And that assumes a quasi-particle description.
Right, but so does this.
No, I don't think so. Is it clear that if I have some strongly coupled soup of electrons?
But if it's strongly coupled, then it's back to where we want to be.
No, but coupled to phonons.
I don't care what the scattering mechanism is. Right. So, as long, right, exactly. Yeah, but I do care whether it's quasi-particle based or not. Okay, So if you can describe it with a Boltzmann equation, then it's, for these points, it's boring for these, for these purposes, right? So I'm interested in cases that cannot be described by Boltzmann equations, okay, by definition.
It doesn't mean it's not polar, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you're not describing a...
Sorry, by phonons, I mean quasi-particle scattering off a mold. Right, not, right, I mean, you know, proper. Okay, so there are two things. So one is that it can't cross the module of a Rego bound, which these materials do. And also, it should be elastic, meaning the Wiedemann prime should be satisfied, okay, which it will be. Okay, this can be tricky because you have to subtract off phonons and so on. But in principle, actually, if you look at copper, this is satisfied in the linear T region. Whilst in these incoherent cases, okay, this is probably, so this Wiedemann-Frand ratio is actually very important. And in the last 10 years, there's lots of experiments and stuff on this ratio, okay? But, okay, so in an incoherent metal, you replace the conductivities by diffusivities times susceptibilities. Let's say the diffusivities are roughly the same order. And then what you'll get is a ratio of thermodynamic quantities, okay? Which you can estimate very, very naively, but we're talking about thermodynamics, so it might be less bad than you think it is using, for example, a Fermi Dirac distribution, just so I can make a plot for C of a chi. And, well, okay, you get, this is L0 is this pi squared over 3 value. Okay, and so, well, basically what you typically expect to find is violation of Wiedemann-Franz with a L over L0 that's lower, okay? And that is, in fact, what you see in the, for example, YBCO and in some heavy fermions like the ones that Seamus, ytterbium, rhodium, what's the last?
Silicon,
thank you. Actually, they do see a violation of Wiedemann-Franz a little bit below the 0.9, what they see. So I think this non-satisfying, whilst in contrast, cerium cobalt-indium 5 in the linear T regime, at least in plane, does satisfy Wiedemann-Franz. Actually, it's really interesting. So that probably is a phonon-like mechanism. Okay, so to end, so I have two final slides. So to come back actually to what Subir said. So indeed, for me, the most important, second most important message is that it would be great to measure diffusion constants, which is not what people normally think about in metals. Okay, that's the point. And so my colleague, Aaron Kapeltunik, actually has a measurement a long time ago of thermal. So thermal diffusion is easier to measure than charge diffusion. And so basically, you put a heat source in with some frequency, and you measure the temperature some distance away, and there's a phase lag. You can just check that it follows the diffusion law, and then you, from the phase lag, it turns out you can extract a diffusion constant. So that was in this paper, and so it looks something like this. You know, constant plus 1/T doesn't look totally. Totally ridiculous, but okay. So unfortunately, then you have to do some annoying things about subtracting out the phonon contribution. But if you do that, this is of in some way that they said many years ago that you should do it. It comes out of the order of these things I'm talking about. Okay, but it would be wonderful to have direct measurements of the charge diffusion in a metal. I think that would be a strongly correlated metal. That, to my knowledge, doesn't exist. That'd be great. Other things, you know, theoretically or experimentally, obviously, it'd be great to look for counterexamples to this bound, and you know, either to disprove it or to refine it, because definitely there's some wiggle room in what I mean by VF, and it would be nice to be more precise about, right? So it'd be nice in particular to define what VF is, and also right at the outset I dropped these thermoelectric terms, and it'd be nice to put them back in. Thanks.
Is that in some sense a prediction about some sort of dispersion relation in these materials? That a VF even exists?
I think something should disperse. It might not be a quasi-particle. It might be a collective, some kind of sound, collective modes. Right. But yeah, indeed. Right, so you could worry about insulators, of course, have, you know, pretty small diffusion constants. And so you'd like to exclude those somehow on the basis they don't have a VF or something like that. But yeah, Seamus.
So is this
approach eventually going to lead you back to kinetic theory pre-quantum mechanics? To Victorian kinetic theory?
No. Well, yeah, it's true that, yeah, actually, I don't know about Victorian, but you know, these kind of formulae are quite old, certainly. No, but there is an H-bar in this bound, right? So I mean, the
but
thing...
But there isn't in your theories. The way you structure them, they look like...
Right, so the exactly. So all
like
the quantum...
kinetic theories.
But all of the... Right, if you like, all the H-bars are in a constant... It reduces to one number or a set of numbers, which do know about quantum mechanics.
I understand. So right. That's a separate hypothesis. One hypothesis is that you have a classic kinetic theory. And the other hypothesis is that there's a bound on it for a separate reason.
Right, but I mean, in a way, I mean, Judah physics is pretty Victorian as well in this sense. So it's no
yeah,
more.
You have Pauli exclusion principle influencing.
Ah, well, good. No. Good. Thank you. That's actually, this VF probably involves some Pauli physics, right? Right. And actually, indeed.
So do you have some holographic picture in mind?
Ah, good. Yes, sorry. So good. So there are two things you can do holographically. One thing that I don't like that much, but you can does land you in this regime, is when you're in a probe limit. So, for example, probe brains. So there, the momentum on the brain it can dump momentum. So you have a neutral bulk with a brain. Okay, I don't know if this means anything to you. Okay, so. So you have an n squared degrees of freedom that are neutral, then you have all the n degrees of freedom that are charged. And they can dump momentum and energy into a bath very, so they lose their momentum and energy very quickly, but the charge cannot be dumped because the bath is neutral. So their conductivities are controlled by diffusion. And I'm currently checking if this works in that case. So actually there are three ways you can do it. So one is within a probe limit. Because you dump momentum but not charge very quickly. I mean, I think that might be as a model to look at these things. Secondly, you could try to do what Subir was talking about before and try to engineer an emergent particle hole symmetry in the IR. And thirdly, right, there are cases, there are a couple of papers that holographically, but this gets a bit trickier. So where you have your boundary and you have some lattice or some disorder, and it actually is relevant. It stays relevant. So, what often happens is it's irrelevant as you go in, and that lands you in this coherent case because momentum relaxation is weak. But there are cases where it actually stays finite, and you get some kind of IR geometry that's very inhomogeneous, but not gapped. But I mean, you have to start worrying about PDEs. I mean, it's complicated, but in principle, those would give models as well. I think.
But you would still need some rational density.
So rational density?
Even if the potential...
Let's take it a bit...
If it falls up to infinity, then it's just normalized.
Right, so...
But if it falls to some finite value, you still need a rational density.
But let's say disorder. Let's take disorder instead of a lattice. So, yeah. So then, I mean, so we have some IR geometry. So it might be that with disorder, one could mock up something. Yeah.
So in this diffusion bound, should I take this to mean whatever VF is, it can't be something that depends on temperature, or is there some?
No, I think it, so it should be the characteristic velocity at the temperature that you're at. So I think it could, in principle, depend on temperature.
You just see something which deviates from linear.
Correct. Well, also, yeah. Oh, good. So I should say. So the reason, also, in principle, the susceptibility could depend on temperature, right? And actually, it's very interesting. So there's this other, there's this uncontrolled thing called DMFT, and actually, they get linear T in two different ways. But in the super high temperature, let's take a super high temperature higher than any other scale, like above the bandwidth, okay? Then actually, it really is classical in the sense that, you know, in the Victorian sense, and then the susceptibility actually goes like 1/T. Just take a Fermi liquid with a bandwidth, so with a maximal excitation, take temperatures well above that, you find that chi goes like 1/T, and the diffusion constant at these high temperatures is probably, because you're above the Fermi energy, it's probably just set by, it's probably 1. And so if you use the Einstein relation, you get a linear resistivity here. But now all the temperature dependence is in chi, not in d. This satisfies the bound, by the way, right? Because this is bigger than 1 over t at large t. But so indeed, if you could measure the diffusion constant, you could test this. So I mean, there's an alternative way to get linear in t with diffusion, which is that chi goes like 1 over t and d is 1. It's actually, and it's not unreasonable.
That's just classical part.
Yeah, okay. People have, without saying
don't
that.
The
no, no, I know, but they okay, yes, that's sort of the point, but that's not how they phrase it. Yeah, right, yeah.
Can you get turbulence in an electronic fluid like this?
Turbulence. You know, I don't have any sound mode, so I've killed momentum. So if you look up in a hydrodynamics book, you'll find these modes, but then there's another one, which is a sound mode, which is related to conservation of momentum, which I've killed. And I'm pretty sure the diffusion equation doesn't give you, yeah, probably doesn't, okay. I don't know, but I suspect you don't get turbulence.
A very good way to find out that you have a different electronic fluid would be to have an electronic fluid which has turbulence in.
Right, but you see, I suspect, so this is not hydrodynamics in this crucial sense that the momentum is not playing, I've killed the momentum. And that makes a difference.
I think the limit of what you're doing is hydrodynamics.
Okay, so this has been a source of confusion several times in the past. So it's hydrodynamic in the sense that it's conserved by controlled quantities, right? But it's not, momentum is not one of them. Okay, so depending, okay, so in particular, there's no Navier-Stokes equation, for example, right? Okay.
So is it the limit of infinitely shear viscosity somehow?
Yeah, maybe, right. Although about infinite, it just needs to be at the same scale as generic, right? But within the if you take the hydrodynamic limit first, that's probably something like that.
I have a stupid holographic question, which is without trying to actually make a holographic model of the coherent metal, I mean, you can just look at the value of the constant.
Right, but then you have to start worrying about what this VF is. No, right. So actually, Pavel and Ritz have a paper. So let's look at diffusion of charge in Schwarzschild, for example. Right, exactly.
How about diffusion of energy?
I think that it's the same. It's the same. So you get d. D is all in one number, c squared over t.
Right.
So
it's like your formula.
Yeah, but as they say in this paper, it's not as powerful as the viscosity bound because there's this dependence on a speed, right? So then I'm trying to say that the metal maybe have a hope again because there is a sort of characteristic speed in a metal. That's the logic, right?
Okay, there's no further questions.